Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Not very long ago, every large city had a morning and afternoon newspaper, and small towns had a daily or at least a weekly paper. The newspapers were often the lifeline for their readers to stay informed. Much has happened since the days when newspapers were the prime source for news. Technology has been one of the biggest factors in how consumers get their news today. News consumers have many, many choices on the internet, much of it free. Most newspapers also have their content on their websites free of charge and continue to rely on advertising for revenue. But in many cases, revenue hasn't kept up. As a result, papers cut staff, especially on the content side, reduced content, erected paywalls that asked customers to pay for an online subscription, or simply closed altogether. On today's program, we examine the changing landscape for newspapers, and we have a full house today. Joining us, Kate Barron, Vice President of Content with Penn Live and the Patriot News, Ted Sickler, Managing Editor of Features and Special Projects of LNP in Lancaster, Alex Hayes is Managing Editor with the Gettysburg Times, and Dr. Kyle Heim is Professor of Communications and Journalism at Shippensburg University. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Ted Sickler, let me start with you, because just this week, LNP announced that there would be a paywall instituted, that starting this past Monday, that anyone who wanted to see your content online, I imagine there are a few free articles, but that they would have to pay for a subscription. Why that decision?
Well, it was a decision that we came to after a lot of consideration about the content and our value to the community through the content. And really, it's an extension of what we believe is our role in Lancaster. And we felt the moment was right. We talked about it. We're a locally owned company. We were able to talk about those things within our company right there. And we felt that the audience at this stage had become more used to paying for subscriptions for various things online. Netflix is one good example. That the idea of subscribing to receive content, received digitally, had become more of a common practice. Now, for a newspaper that had long given away that content online, it meant for us to re-express to our audience our value. And I think that's where our moment is right now. Not only in the national debate about newspapers and news, but also what we do in the community. How do we have value in what we do? We also were at a moment, I think, within our news organization that we had not recently cut a lot of staff. We're a strong, vibrant newsroom. We have 80 people. We have 85 correspondents. We have a lot of content. So the moment was right, we felt, as well, to really put full value behind that work and what those folks do. So that's why we rolled it out now.
Value is one thing. Revenue is another. There had to be some consideration of the revenue that you would generate from subscriptions.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, you know, this changing nature of revenue for advertising, revenue from sponsorships, or revenue from circulation is very much in flux. I think from a newsroom point of view, what has happened is the writer has become closer to the reader in many ways. You know, we are very much developing a relationship as writers and as journalists directly now with the people that we're writing for. And it's not in the same way as the print delivery system used to be. We need to create content that drives readers back to us, you know, online. We want them to visit our site multiple times through the month, and we have to have the content there that they're going to want to read. They have to come to us, much different than delivering simply a print product to their doorstep on a daily basis. So it's really changed what we do.
When you say that you want your readers to revisit, do you count clicks?
Sure. I think we watch that all the time. And I think not only do we count clicks around just the size of our audience, but we're also looking, of course, for what their interests are. And, you know, it's not necessarily an effort to chase clicks. I think a news organization still remains very balanced and should remain very balanced about what it covers. I often use the example of covering religion. We are, you know, one of the few papers in the nation that has a faith section on Saturdays. And religion is a big interest in our audience. if we were to write only stories about Christianity, because that's where the clicks lie online, that would be shutting out many other types of faith coverage. We know we have audience members that are interested in the Muslim faith. So, for example, in this example, we have to stay balanced. We have to provide both kinds of content, regardless of where the clicks may go. So that's part of what we do when we look at clicks.
Just out of curiosity, does the faith section get a lot of clicks?
You know, our faith section is interesting. I've only just started watching it in terms of clicks this week, so there's a lot to learn in terms of faith. We know from the print product that's a key part of our audience. You know, that's a
very and that's what I was getting section. At is yeah. that yeah kind of reaction it got.
Right.
So, Kate Barron, Patriot News, and this has been going on for a few years now, where the decision that you made, not just you, but the paper overall, was to reduce the number of print copies and put almost all your copy, or excuse me, all your content online through Penn Live. Maybe it's time to revisit that decision since, you know, we're talking about this overall. Why was that decision made? And as you look back, what can you tell us about it?
Well, I'll quote my former publisher, John Kirkpatrick, who always would say, we got tired of managing just the decline, and that decline was coming out of the print side. The industry average, I think, is to lose about 10% of circulation every year, and we saw that flow chart just keep developing. So we decided we had to go all in with digital, and I do think we got a really good head start on that, which has benefited us very well. We still have our revenue issues, absolutely, but as far as size and magnitude of our website, of Penn Live, and our social accounts, they're booming. And I also want to throw in that I signed up for the paywall over at LNP about 3 days in. I only lasted a few days without it because it's such a great institution. But we really saw this week, for instance, how the power is in digital journalism. People needed that flood news right away. They could not wait until the paper hit their stoop the next morning. So I think we made the right decision. It is a really challenging time for the entire industry. And everyone's going out there and having to make very gutsy, very, you know, daring decisions and doing a lot of that.
But what you just said, that this week being a good example, as someone who I don't want to say came up, but that was your background in print, there has to be a side of you that kind of kills you.
Oh, of course. I mean, I shed some tears that first week. We were down to 3 days a week. But I will say, as I look back and see how big Penn Live has developed its audience, it was the right decision for us.
Mm-hmm. You say you have revenue challenges, and I want to ask all of you about that. But you know, the model was that the paper relied on advertising for its revenue. And I don't know, you can tell, the four of you can tell me a little bit better, but it doesn't seem as though revenue has kept up as papers have moved to that digital platform. Is that accurate?
I would say it's a lot harder to sell digital than it is to sell print. A lot of it is the newness of the whole structure. It's a challenge. But it's where the readers have gone.
But in answer to the question, It hasn't kept up.
We have a harder time making budget than we used to. But we are now at the point, as we wanted to be, where about half of our sales revenue is from digital, which tells us that we're looking into the future, not having to rely on such a big chunk of it coming from print, because that would be a real problem for us.
Mm-hmm. Alex Hayes, Gettysburg Times, one of the smaller papers, because it's a smaller town. Your website, it appears as though everything is free, but there is an e-edition, correct?
No, actually, we have our website is not free.
It's not?
No.
See, I went this morning. I just went.
We have a paywall. We do give like the first paragraph to explain to people.
Okay, you tease us.
Right, and there are some free content. We don't charge for obituaries or anything like that. But the e-edition we find is a huge push because it looks just like the regular paper, and you know, a lot of people love the e-edition for many reasons, and it's a wide age range. I mean, we in Gettysburg we have a lot of seniors, so they love it because if they go to Florida for the winter, they can take the paper with them, and they love the fact that they can pull it up on their iPad or their iPhone or any kind of device, and it, you know, the online and the print and edition really do marry up well together, because online, you know, we don't have the resources to focus, you know, to divide our staff with print and online. We need it, everyone to be doing both at the same time. But, you know, if a sports photographer goes to a game, he's not taking one photo. Even though the print edition might show one photo or two photos, he's taking 500 photos. Now, we're not putting 500 online, but, you know, you have the opportunity to go to online and look at that, you know, 20 photos from a baseball game and versus one. And we give our print subscribers all free access to the online.
Mm-hmm. Kate and Ted, I mean, even larger papers are doing that. We're reporters. Mm-hmm. It's no longer that you're just doing a story for the print edition and that's it. I mean, you're doing for online. There's audio and video a lot of times as well, right?
Oh, yeah. Plus, our reporters now all shoot video. The team produced about 55 videos in the last 4 days of flooding, which I thought was really amazing. They're all shooting their own photos. We have a small staff of photographers, but again, because of revenue issues, our staff is smaller. We've had to make sure that everybody can multitask and do everything out there. And I'll tell you, it is so challenging to be a reporter these days, but it's also, I think, very empowering, very liberating.
Well, the audience expectation is there, too, increasingly, that, you know, they want video as often as they want to be able to read a story. So, you know, meeting that expectation, particularly now that we're doing digital subscription, that is very much becoming part of our game if it's not already fully there. So, you know, we work on it constantly.
Well, audience expectations are what I wanted to discuss next. I wanted to bring in Dr. Kyle Heim, professor of communications journalism at Shippensburg University, also a reporter himself at the Chicago Tribune and some other newspapers.
Actually, I was a copy editor at the Chicago Tribune.
Okay.
So I did a little bit of reporting at some other newspapers, but mostly in editing positions.
So what I wanted to do was get this 30,000-foot view from you from an academic point of view, and especially since you are working with students who are mostly young, what are those expectations of newspapers today?
Well, you know, it's certainly, just as it's a challenge for the newspaper industry, it's a challenge for teaching journalism as well, because with the way that the media landscape is changing, it's hard to prepare students for the future of journalism when we don't know exactly what that future is going to look like. And with all of the different things that they need to do, multitasking, being able to not only write and report the news, but also to shoot and edit video and audio and podcasting and blogging and live tweeting. And there's so many different things that they have to know how to do these days for the job, that it really does make it a challenge for those of us who teach journalism as far as, you know, what that means for changing the curriculum. Does that mean that we need to add a whole bunch of new courses in these different skills areas? Or does it mean that we just, you know, stick to the basics of teaching journalism, the same things that we've always taught, and then they'll learn the technology when they go out on the job? So, you know, there's a lot of discussions going on among educators about exactly where the journalism instruction needs to go these days.
Well, that brings me back to, and I did want to go back to audience expectations as well, but young reporters that you're hiring, what do they expect? I mean, we all know of the grizzled veterans who, you know, who became columnists, or reporters became columnists, but today's young reporter, young journalist, what do they expect and what are they trained to do?
They're actually training us in some senses.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, we have two young reporters and, you know, their mindset is, because they learned it in college, is to get the video, get all that. And those of us who have been around for a little bit, that's not our first thought sometimes. I mean, we try to think that way, but they're the ones throwing it in our face saying, we need to do a video, we need to do this. And I know in my newsroom, you know, they're driving us veterans.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think the number one job right now for managers within newsrooms is to be listening.
Yeah.
You know, we have about a dozen what I would call millennials. You know, they're in the the first few years of their profession. And it's increasingly important that a manager listens to what their interests are, but also tries to, I think, educate them in terms of not only the jobs that they might do as journalists, but the business as a whole. Because, you know, Kate's operation is much different than the Lancaster operation, but they may work in both of those locations at some point. And they're going to need to be able to be fluid about their career and how they understand the journalism to work in those locations. I think that's a big responsibility right now of journalists to train other journalists to provide that platform for success for their future career once they get out of college and begin, you know, hitting the workforce.
I would totally agree with that, but I'm going to speak up for the grizzled veterans of the journalism world in that some have been the quickest adapters to what we're doing. I think of Matt Miller, who's been with us. I think he's been there longer than I have at the Patriot News and Penn Live. Fabulous digital journalist, seeing huge audience for his work. And that's been true for a lot of our veterans. Jan Murphy, I don't want to start listing because I'll miss people. But I will say this too, you have to have that mix. It's all part of diversity, actually, making sure you have people of all ages in your room that you can all learn from. We had a really terrific intern this year, Katie Schreckengast, who's Miss Pennsylvania, and is at the communications school over at Penn State. And she taught us so much about really shooting effective video. So we learned from everyone.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the changing landscape for newspapers today. Our guest, Kate Barron, Vice President of Content with Penn Live and the Patriot News. Ted Sickler, Managing Editor of Features and Special Projects with LNP in Lancaster. Alex Hayes, Managing Editor of the Gettysburg Times. And Dr. Kyle Hine, Professor of Communications and Journalism at Shippensburg University. If you have a question or a comment, we will get to your phone calls. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page, on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Now, I do want to get back to audience. And one of the things I want to talk about is we've used the word millennial. The millennial generation is considered the first digital generation. Many of them have never paid for news. How do you convince them that subscriptions are worth the money?
Well, I think increasingly there's examples of subscriptions that they are paying for. I mean, they've become many ways, you know, they've cut the cord on many things. And in doing so, they watch their TV necessarily not on cable the way that, you know, we may have in the last 20 years. They pay for things like Netflix. And they're, I
music.
Think,
now.
Music.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Music is
so
not.
So that's kind of trained them to.
You know, it's definitely changed the conversation. You know, as I've looked at comments in the past week on our stories that are shared through social, sure, there's a lot of folks raising questions about why you might pay for something. But it's interesting the number of people that are jumping into the comments line also saying, look, these folks are working for you. You know, working journalists require to be paid. You know, what they do is worth the money that people are paying them and what you may spend on this content.
What do you charge, Ted?
We're doing some introductory charges right now. I think it's 99 cents introductory.
For
I think
how long?
I think that's 99 cents per month right now. Mm-hmm. And I think we're also doing day passes. People come to our site in different ways. And particularly the biggest audience that we're working with right now are print subscribers who have access to their digital subscriptions just by activating them. So a lot of conversations we've had this week are actually with our print subscribers who are now taking advantage of this thing that they have.
Alex, what's your paywall charge?
I believe it's $85 for the e-edition and the online for a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, a year. And that's what I tell people all the time. Like, we are giving a product that you cannot get anywhere else. Nobody else is covering the Gettysburg School Board, the Borough Council, all, you know, that local stuff that sometimes impacts your daily life more than anything going on in Washington or anywhere else because it's so tuned into your community. And like, we're giving you a product that you literally cannot get anywhere else. And, you know, there's a value to that because you have the, you know, you read about it in the paper, you go to your school board, you share your thoughts, and it all ties in because you've, people are obviously passionate about their local community. You see it all the time, people talking online, whether it's Facebook or whatever. And where are they hearing about this? They're hearing it through local newspapers because we're the ones, I mean, you go to a meeting, most of the time the only person in the audience is that reporter for the paper because people are busy and they don't have time to be going to meetings.
But is that the case today? And I have some numbers here and I kind of, there are a lot of different topics I want to talk about, but University of Notre Dame, University of Chicago, did a study that was released this week that, and you can find these figures anywhere, I'm sure you're well aware of them, that there's been a 27% drop in circulation nationally over the last 15 years. State House reporters, a 40% drop. There have been, I don't know how many papers that have closed. New York Daily News this week cut half its staff. So there has been a cutback. There has to be a cutback in some of the coverage.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, what coverage is missing?
If we can get to everything that we want to cover, we're not covering nearly as many municipalities as we used to. When I started 13 years ago, we had 6 reporters full-time. We're down to 3. The editors really have to be paying attention as to where our resources are going, and that's the hardest part. You know, we would love to be doing the coverage we did 15, 20 years ago, but we just have to be more aware, and we have a more of a responsibility to be listening to our audience, to know what they want, to know what affects them, and to also know what's going on in the towns that we're maybe not sending a reporter to, because if they're all they're doing is approving someone's shed permit, that's not a good waste of or good use of our time. But 6 months later, that same municipality may be talking about putting a major roundabout on a major intersection that not only will affect their residents, but also residents who drive through there on a daily basis. So basically our whole coverage area.
Kate, you've had to make some cutbacks.
We certainly have. When I started out as editor 6 years ago, we had about 130 people in the newsroom, and we're down to less than half of that. But what we're doing is really working with the metrics to see what our readers want us to be covering. I won't contend that we used to go to over a dozen municipal meetings every week. Very laborious, very time-consuming, often valuable, often not valuable. We have other ways now to try and collect that news, and I think it works really well, and starting with social media and what people are talking about. But I would also add that we look to see what people are interested in, and something that hit me over the head recently, and we should have been on it much sooner, is people are fascinated with retail coverage, an area that we just didn't touch. They want to know what stores are opening, what stores are closing.
Really?
And retails, and we should have known this when we saw how popular our restaurant news was that Sue Glider produces. This week with the flooding, one of the top stories, Dockside Willie's gets hit again. It's those name type retail organizations that are really popular with readers. So we've now put somebody on covering retail news, something that we've never done really at the paper or the website in my 30 years there. And I'm really glad we're doing it. So we use them, we use the audience trends to decide what we're going to cover.
And LMP, I know you actually have a column about what each week, what is opening, what's closing, things like that. But Ted, you use a lot of stringers, I've noticed.
Yeah, we do use a lot of stringers. And just quickly on the shopping, it's been a huge area for us, too. And in fact, you know, talking with one of the younger members of staff yesterday, they were suggesting ideas that were just along those lines. Like, you know, they're interested in sneaker shopping, you know, things that are conversations. Our correspondents are a key part of what makes, I think, Lancaster very different than what the national trends are, in that our decline in circulation has not been at those levels of the national numbers in print. And it's allowed us to approach digital much differently, too. So, you know, we have a large staff. We also have a large number of correspondents. We have 3 weeklies in the county in addition to LNP. So our coverage of the county itself is very rich and very deep with a lot of connections. But that doesn't mean we don't need to be out there more. We regularly now hold sessions where we just go to different communities and hold kind of coffee sessions, much more than I think the paper did in the past. And it's important for us to be listening in those sessions. What are the interests? What are the things that should be covered? It's an opportunity for us that we really need to take advantage of in Lancaster for this depth of coverage that we have and the ability to get all the places that we're able to get.
I think LNP is really good at that, and we're doing more of that as well. I would point to, let's talk about prep sports, for instance. It used to be every Friday night we'd have 2 dozen reporters at the high school games. We cannot afford that now. We will do a couple games, but we can't cover the whole Mid-Penn Conference. So what we do instead is concentrate on building up relationships between the coaches, between the players, to make sure that we're getting the news we need to get. I will just talk about how right now we have 20 more minutes or so before we start our high school media days at Penn Live, where we will have probably 40 representatives from 40 teams and their coaches from MidPen to come in and talk about football. What's the season like ahead of time? Get photos, get personal player interviews, things like that. There are other ways to approach the news when you've had to cut staff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that a big part of that, too, is a diverse newsroom. Because if you have, you know, the reporters and editors need to be in their community learning about what they care about. Online is a huge part, listening and reading Facebook and all that, but, you know, actually boots on the ground. And when the newsroom is diverse and you have people of all different ages who spend their social time in different areas, you learn more about what the community cares about.
I was going to say, too, with the changing landscape for media, I think it really has forced newspapers to sit and ask themselves, what is it that we can offer readers that nobody else can? Because there are so many sources out there on the web. People can go so many places to find information. And that's always been a challenge for paywalls, is that people won't want to pay for the news if they know they can find that same information from another source where it's free on the web. Even if the quality of the information isn't necessarily quite as strong as that of newspapers. So in order to get people to come to the newspaper's website and pay for the news, you really have to offer something that they're not going to be able to get anywhere else. And that's really forced newspapers to, you know, focus in on their local communities. That really intensely local coverage, I think, is really what they can offer that nobody else can.
Well, and that's, you all have done that. You all have done, I mean, even as part of LNP, when you changed the name, Always Lancaster, I guess in that way, we can say a good thing happened there. But at the same time, you know, one of the things I think a lot of people do, is that there is so much online, and a lot of people can't tell the difference between what is factual, what is credible, and what's not. Mm-hmm. And that's something that all of you run into. I'm curious, other than other newspapers, who is your biggest competition online for people who are going online and looking for news?
Well, I actually think it's in the categories in some of the areas. You know, in the features area, we have a lot of interest built around food and music and entertainment. In many ways, the startups have been in those categories. You know, when you see a new media startup, it might be around restaurants or it might be around shopping. And they try to really own that category of content. So a newspaper, in many ways, has to bear that in mind when it's approaching things. And those are the areas that I'm thinking a lot about now, is digital subscribers not only want the news, as we're talking about, and needing it in the way that they're getting it or being delivered to them, they want a community to be involved in, too. And all of that exists in Lancaster County. There's foodies in Lancaster County. You've got growers in Lancaster County. We have grocery stores popping up everywhere in Lancaster County. So those kind of things, I think, are where we also need to bear in mind where our competition is.
I think that's so true. And I would also point out, for us, when I look at the competition, I think it's fiercest among the sports websites. There's a site called The Athletic. It's a very good site.
It's actually fairly new. Yeah.
Yes, and it's now staking out its territory all across the country, and it's heavily moving into Pennsylvania. Mm. So I think they might be watching things up in State College, which we always thought that was our franchise, but it is. But we're Penn State football, absolutely, and I think they're in Philly as well, and probably Pittsburgh. I'm looking at all the action going on with the sports, and that's just one of many.
And that is a paid website too, that people have to pay to get that content. Let's take some phone calls. Dave is in Hummelstown. Dave is the editor of the Hummelstown Sun, and Dave, you've been patiently waiting online. Go right ahead.
First of all, thanks for having me on, and I want to congratulate the Gettysburg Times and now LNP for doing the smart thing and charging people for content.
Why do you say that?
People will pay for good content, and if you don't charge them, you're going to go out of business.
Do you charge for your paper?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We've always had a paywall. We've never given it away for free. As I've always told my daughters, who's going to buy the cow if they get the milk for free?
Hmm. All right, Dave, thank you very much for your call. You know, we've, even in broadcasting, you know, and it's probably something similar in print, is that content is king, and that when it does come to content, that's the reason people listen to this radio station, people that buy your newspapers or subscribe to your newspapers, the content. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of them are not buying it or paying for it to look at the ads, mm-hmm. even though that's part of it, but they're looking for the content. So the point that Dave makes about people willing to pay for content, what about that?
Well, and I think it gets back to your point, too, of needing in this media landscape to be clear that our content can be trusted, that we're of value. You know, I think we looked at Facebook yesterday and the loss of the shares in Facebook. Mm. I think part of that is, you know, they don't create content. You know, we've, for many years, media as a whole, provided their content to them, and not always to our benefit. Now I think we're seeing things where, you know, the media organizations in many different ways, because our audience itself is so large, as Kate says, and has grown, it's our opportunity to say, you know what, we believe in our brand as a news organization. We believe in the trust that we have with our readership, and we need to express it that way. So when we're out there against, you know, startups or folks that do not have the same journalism standards that we might, we want to be clear about what those standards are and how we approach them.
Not only that, but I think it's important to let people know that most of this content originates from us. You know, in Gettysburg, we talk about competition. Some of our biggest competition are these Facebook sites that start talking about our stories. And people are like, well, I read that on the Gettysburg Wire. I'm like, yes, because they got it from the Gettysburg Times. And that's where they're getting their, like, if you just follow the train, it all leads back to the local newspapers who are actually going out and getting the news. People talking about it online aren't generating that stuff. We are.
I had a guest just a few months ago who, you know, was in an organization dealing with journalists, newspaper broadcast and all that, said that actually most people today, if you look at it, I don't know if there's anything to gauge this, measure this by, that most people today are getting their news through Facebook. Because there are so many now, it's not that Facebook is creating that content, but they're doing just exactly what Alex said, is that, you know, because you all, there are people who are posting your stories on Facebook, there are so many people out there that actually Facebook is where they get most of their news. It may derive with you, but they're getting it, a lot of people are getting it through Facebook.
That's why we have to be there. That's why we have so many Facebook pages. That's why we are on Twitter, as everybody else is here. That's why we are heavily involved in Instagram, and we're even doing some Snapchat. We have to be where the audience is going.
Mm-hmm. We have an email here, and this gets into the kind of the big picture. The listener says, the loss of our independent newspapers is a serious threat to America. If we lose our free press, we'll end up like Russia. Americans need to realize that quality information doesn't come for free. You get what you pay for. All right, so this kind of transitions into that bigger conversation. We all, and I really hate the term fake news, but we hear it every single day. And we have people who have questioned institutions like a free press, and especially newspapers. And the president calls the New York Times the failing New York Times. The word failing is always before he mentions New York Times. On a local level, what have you seen as far as your readers and their trust in your product?
Well, you know, one of the gauges of engagement that we have with our paper has always been our letters to the editor. And our letters to the editor have remained extremely healthy. And I think that's an indication of Lancaster County being very involved in not only politics and their community, but in the area that we are the vehicle to share their views. And in those pages, you know, I think there's a healthy debate going on about both the president and politics and the media, but also coming from all sides. And I think increasingly, there's an understanding of what good news value is. One of the things we did right after the President Trump was elected was hosted a session with you all, WITF, over at eTown that really was about how can we be transparent to our audience? How can we explain again what the value is of what journalism is? And build that trust, continue to have that trust. And I think we need to continue to explain it.
But Ted, do we have to do that? I mean, do we have to tell the public all the time that you can trust us.
Yes.
We do.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Mean, we have to continue to build that relationship. We, you know, moving into this digital subscription world this week, one of the key things we have to do is continue to maintain that relationship we have with our readers. We take their trust in our ability to report the news correctly very seriously, and as anyone does in the media right now that's in the news media. And it's something we constantly have to work on and talk about.
And we need to respond to them. I mean, someone wrote, you know, Ted brought up a great point about the Letters Theater, because we get like 5 or 6 a day, which makes us really happy. And I always, you know, sometimes I have to write the headlines for them. And we ran a letter this week that basically the guy was talking about how President Trump is like Abraham Lincoln. Gettysburg, obviously, a big topic. Well, somebody called me and they said, I can't, and I made the headline, Trump like Lincoln, you know, and they called me, I said, I can't believe your liberal bias and you made that headline. And I'm like, did you read the letter? That's exactly what it was about. And it, but I didn't say that. I mean, I called them, I explained it to them on a voicemail. Unfortunately, they didn't call me back, so we couldn't have that conversation, but we have to have conversations with our readers. That's the biggest key, is talking to the people that we serve.
Well, we haven't talked about this yet, but, and we get our good fair share of letters to the editor as well, and they are so valuable. We do reader panels as well, too. It's outreaching, things that we wouldn't have done 20 years ago. But I'll tell you, the most vibrant conversations are happening in our comments on Facebook and on the site.
Okay.
Let me finish,
okay?
I brought it up, so.
Okay, all right.
And what we're doing, and we are moderating the heck out of those comments, and we know it gets rather salty out there at times, but they have also led to some incredibly constructive conversations on a lot of different areas, not to mention the amazing amount of news tips we get. I'll go back to flooding this week. We had people in our comments constantly, watch out, this road's closed, watch out, you know, blah, 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 blah. There was a lot of good information being shared in them as well. This wasn't happening 20 years ago. The comments have a very good purpose to serve in opening things up for readers, not just the editors sitting in their offices or even the reporters, but making sure that we're hearing from readers, and we're hearing from them loudly.
But at the same time, now, you know, as you said, they get rather salty.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard many people say, boy, some of those comments on Penn Live, you wonder what you get out of it. Some news organizations have gone as far. NPR, for example, doesn't take comments any longer, or at least doesn't reprint those comments on their website.
Yes, you know what? I really miss that. I really miss that when NPR dropped that, because I'm an avid reader of that site. But I look at the New York Times, I look at the Post. A lot of people are still sticking with the comments, and I want to, too. This has been a lot of soul searching, because comments can be very problematic. God knows we've all been banged up by them over the years. But at the same time, I still think that the good outweighs some of the people out there that will just say anything.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Dr. Kyle Heim, Professor of Communications Journalism at Shippensburg University, Alex Hayes, Managing Editor of the Gettysburg Times, Ted Sickler, Managing Editor of Features and Special Projects at LNP in Lancaster, and Kate Barron, Vice President of Content with Penn Live and the Patriot News. We're talking about the changing landscape of newspapers. So much to talk about. An hour isn't enough time. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Let's take a phone call from Mary in Camp Hill. Mary, you're on the air.
Hi. My son graduated from the Newhouse School of Communications, and now he's a producer for USA Today Sports, but on the app, on the USA Today Sports app. And now I don't know if I would encourage him to do that. He got a raise on Tuesday, the same day that 150 people from the Daily News lost their jobs. So I think it's kind of a hard field to be in right now, and I think the respect is much less, which is very sad, because these guys do a great service for this country.
Thank you very much. Okay, well, thank you very much for your call. You know, I've heard other people say this, and before I weigh in here, what do you think about it? Is it a tough time to get into journalism?
It's definitely a tough time to get into journalism, because we really are in such a state of chaos almost right now, because we're still trying to figure out what the economic model is that's going to sustain journalism because of all the technological changes. So it is a difficult time to go into the field of journalism.
And we're not as respected as we once were.
Oh, certainly. Certainly, there's that issue as well, that people don't necessarily trust us. At the same time, you know, I think it's an exciting time, too. I mean, the students in my classes are the ones who are going to figure this all out. They're the ones who are going to figure out what the next economic model is going to be that's going to help sustain journalism in the future. They're the ones who are going to be, you know, taking this new technology and running with it. But you certainly, if you're going to go into the journalism field today, you know, you have to be very flexible and you have to accept the fact that, you know, your job is not going to be secure, that you never know whether or not you're going to be one of the next people to lose their job. And what I would say, though, is that, you know, as someone who teaches journalism, I think the skills that we give students, the things that you learn by doing journalism and in journalism classes, learning to go out and talk to the community, learning to gather information, write it up in a coherent fashion, edit, all of those kinds of skills, those writing, reporting, information gathering, editing skills, are skills that are so valuable, and not just valuable in journalism, right, but even to students who might decide that they want to go into some other field.
There's communication skills, which we're talking about.
Right.
Just a quick aside, spoke to a class at Penn State Harrisburg, communications class, about 15 years ago. Afterwards, the kids were asking questions, and almost every single question was about, how do I get into TV? did the same thing, I guess it was about a year ago, at Elizabethtown College, and almost all the questions were, how do I get into digital media, social media? And just those two examples alone show where the priorities have gone.
Yeah, and I would add on that to say, we were going to talk about journal schools a little bit, journalism schools have to realize that they need to produce students that are agile in all those areas. I mean, I always wince when I see there's a broadcast school and there's a print school or whatever. They should all be one big discipline, so that kids come out of there learning every part of it, because our last two hires had TV background. It's really changed in what they know. I would also contend that get them to talk to people out in the field that are actually doing the work, because if you've been away from journalism for the last, what did you say, 3 years, 5 years, it's totally changed. It's totally changed what's going on out there. But one more thing I'd also add, they still need to know the basics, how to tell a good story, how to tell it well, how to be accurate, how to develop sources, those basic skills that we've been preaching for forever.
Absolutely. I'm just going to say that versatility is key, like Kate said. I mean, we have a reporter who came from Shippensburg University, and, you know, she was able, because of the skills that she got there, you know, it used to be that you were a reporter, not a photographer. Now you're a reporter, you're a photographer, you're a copy editor, you're a videographer. You're basically a utility knife for journalism, and you got to be doing that.
And I coordinate the intern program at LNP, and this summer we've had four interns there. And I will tell you, you know, I am encouraged by how positive they are about what they're doing. You know, I do not see a moment of doubt in these young people to decide to go into journalism. You know, they are very fully involved in what they want to do. It's my responsibility, and really all of our responsibility in the newsroom, to make sure that they can get to the next step with what they want to do.
The enthusiasm is definitely still there. I mean, students, they're aware of the fact that the media aren't as respected today as they were maybe, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago, but they still have that passion, that enthusiasm for journalism. In fact, I was just reading an article that some of the bigger journalism schools have actually seen an increase in enrollment in the past year or two, and they say that part of that may be a Trump bump with all of the coverage of politics, that's getting young people more interested in doing journalism and investigative journalism. So the interest is still, you know, is still very strong. But yeah, if you're going to be a journalist these days, I mean, we get a lot of students who come to Shippensburg and they say, I want to write. And we have to tell them, well, you're going to be writing, but you're also going to have to be shooting video and recording audio and doing all of these different things.
Real quick, and I do ask for a quick answer because we are starting to run short on time. But when we talk about bias, the president talks about that, and a lot of his allies have talked about, have the three of you ever had a reporter or anyone in your newsroom say, I'm going to stick it to this guy?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Well, not in my current newsroom, but I've seen reporters over the years, and that's when you're like trying to find them the fastest exit out the door.
Well, I was going
to
say, okay, yeah, because yeah. if you have, I am assuming yeah. they're not employed very
long. Right. No. And that's when that's where you need to be paying attention to what's going on, because as soon as they start with this.
Their own point of
yeah,
view.
Yeah, exactly. Because, I mean, hiring is the worst part of the job. It's hard in an interview to figure out who you're getting. But as soon, you know, you're like, okay, check with HR and get them out the door as fast as possible in the most legal sense of the way.
I guess my point is yeah. that it, the most legal part. Yeah. Then there'd be a story.
Yeah.
But the point is that just what you said, Alex, is that if, even if you may agree with them politically or their point of view, if that's coming through, they're gone.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
All right, let's take a phone call now from, let's see, is this Theodora? Theodora in Columbia, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to compliment the Lancaster newspapers for what they've been doing to make their paper better, and also Kate Barron. I think they're doing wonderful jobs. The problem that I see is that there is no investigative reporting except on the local level. Now, I understand how hard it is to have anything but New York Times, Washington Post articles, AP articles, but it seems to me that maybe this should sink down to the elementary and secondary schools. Teach the kids to be investigative reporters, whatever that means to the teachers.
All right. Thank you very much for your call.
Yeah.
This is an area that I'm sure there's had to be some cutbacks in because of cutting staff. Now, Kate, I know because we've had some of your reporters on, that there are some long-term projects. Just talked about one with water with Wallace McKelvey a few weeks ago. But is this an area where we need more investigative reporting?
Oh, absolutely. But it's hard, going back to the resources part. You know, if you have someone doing an investigative piece, you're basically pulling him or her off of her beat for a few weeks. And when you're taking one reporter and devoting them to a huge project, you're losing that content on a daily level. And that's where we struggle all the time. We did an opioid series last year, and we did another series on volunteer firefighters and the lack of them in Adams County. And so that's more where we go to, is the long-term projects that we can spend put a weekly series out with the whole staff, but we might spend 6 or 8 months doing it.
Yes, it's able to say we can't do this anymore, but we're going to do this. And our big priorities are investigative and watchdog. We have a team that's as large as it's ever been, I can say that, to do that kind of work. And then we really concentrate heavily on breaking news.
I just want to go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely investigative. And you know, the caller's comment about it being an idea that gets pushed down through education and educating our readers more about what is investigative is a great idea. You know, one of the things that we've learned in journalism is follow the story, follow the questions. Bob Woodward followed it. Ben Bradley followed it. We need to continue to follow the story through the questions that get asked, and that's investigative work.
I wanted to follow up that University of Chicago Notre Dame study that I mentioned earlier. That same study said that they found that where newspapers closed, that municipalities borrowed more money afterwards, that there were higher wages in government, and there were more tax dollars per capita. What's that say to you?
Yeah, that's they call them news deserts, and I think that's absolutely true. Now, I will say, on the upside, I was on a couple weeks ago to talk about the statewide opioids project that we did. I talked to probably 40-some editors across the state about getting together to share content. Everybody stepped up. Everybody wanted to get involved. We are doing a lot more content sharing than we used to with other sites. I know we're doing something with the upcoming grand jury report that's coming out on the diocese. So we don't have to send somebody to Erie. So we don't have to send somebody to Greensburg. We will be sharing among newsrooms. And I think that that's been one good way to try to ease up on that and still do really hard-hitting work.
And that, you know, that watchdog, that total, that amount that gets saved or looked at because journalists are in the room when those decisions are getting made, it isn't always a big chunk of money, right? You know, it's savings where there's a decision made in an intersection somewhere or a building that doesn't get built or does get built. You know, it's that constant look at what decisions are made in local government that results in those kind of savings. And places like LNP have been in that location for a long time. So I totally believe that that's the kind of effect that journalism has.
There's lots of consequences when a community loses its newspaper. There have also been studies that have been done that have shown that when a newspaper closes, that voter participation declines, that people don't know about their local candidates and therefore they don't vote, and that when newspapers aren't covering the local politicians, that those politicians aren't working as hard or doing as much for the community. I mean, you know, local journalism really is so vital to democracy that it's something we definitely need to preserve.
Well, we did not have enough time. Really good conversation today, but I want to thank all four of you for being with us today.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Scott.
Coming up on Monday, we're going to be talking about, yesterday we got to talk with the campaign manager for Bernie Sanders, got us to thinking about democratic socialism. That's what we're going to discuss as part of Monday's program.